I'm Duncan McLeod, and you're listening to a promoted Tech Central podcast brought to you by Axis. I'm in Midrand today to talk to Jacques Malherbe, Chief Technology Officer at Axis. Welcome to the podcast, Jacques.
Thank you, Duncan. Pleasure to be here.
So tell us a bit about Axis. You guys are part of the Alviva Holdings stable. What is it you guys do? I know you're a distributor, but maybe paint a bit of a picture.
Thank you, Duncan. Yes, Axis's role is really as an enterprise distributor. That's where we have a niche inside of the Alviva Group, is that we focus on value-add distribution of leading data center-centric technologies and all the hardware, top garden, right-hand corner hardware and software products that system integrators and service providers and resellers need to manufacture solutions for their customers.
And you're Chief Technology Officer of this business. What does that role entail exactly?
Yeah, I'm not sure it defines the role really, as opposed to an industrial or an enterprise CTO. The job entails identifying new technologies and finding out how these technologies can be shaped through a distribution channel and enabled for resellers to consume inside of an ecosystem. So it's not looking for the internal consumption of that technology or the organization to adopt the technology to use for their own production, but rather how do we identify leading technologies that we can supply to the channel for them to be better positioned to service their end users.
It must be quite an interesting job. I'd imagine it entails a lot of travel, visiting interesting companies, seeing interesting new things, and trying to decide what the next big thing is going to be.
Yeah, I think that's what the job entails. But by implication, it means digging through huge mountains of information, mm-hmm. Because everybody claims that they've got the answer, the silver bullet that's going to change the world. And you know, as we are now in a phase of transformation, digital transformation, where there are huge amount of new challenges coming onto the markets that's challenging the old guard with new technologies, one has to hold one's breath and sometimes be scratch around in the dark a little bit to try and figure out what will survive and what will actually make sense a year, 2 years, 3 years from now before one can invest in those technologies.
How do you do that? How do you separate the wheat from the chaff?
Yeah. I think it's got to do with certainly experience, being in the market a long time, and be able to kind of see the trend lines that have evolved, because there are some surface currents and then there are deep currents, and one can't react to the surface currents too quickly because it can cost you a lot of money. Mm. The second thing is one needs to listen to the market and listen to the end users and listen to business. If it doesn't make business sense, it's basically a fad or just a bubble busy developing. Mm. So how can this technology translate into value for a business, and either in cost or efficiency or strategic advantage or some form where it can be articulated to the board and to their customers that we're doing this because it's going to translate into something valuable. Mm. If it doesn't make sense, business sense, it doesn't make sense.
Are there specific technologies or ideas that have got you particularly excited in 2019, things that are coming that you think are going to have a big impact?
Yes, I am. I think the cloud conversation is certainly a little bit tired already. Everybody is coming to a point where we accept that as the de facto thing. That's the way we will consume technology in the future. It's a hybrid environment, but it means cloud will be present. And all of the values of cloud, you know, the flexibility, the scalability, the additional services, the cost advantage, the accessibility, etc., all of those things will translate into some value for the businesses. But that's not the secret sauce. The secret sauce is the data. Mm-hmm. Some people refer to data as oil. I prefer to refer to it as water. Oil you burn and it's gone. Water is a sustainable resource. It continuously provides life to the organization, and you can mine that. So technologies around data. How do we look at data better? How do we access data better? How do we mine it better? And once we have it, how do we automate it to automate our insights back into the business? So I think that's the technologies around data, and the intelligence around data is certainly going to be a game changer. The next thing is IT's foray into industrial. So just like we saw the old analog PABXs and voice services make way for IP, we'll see the same IP taking over in the industrial sector. But it comes with its security risks. It comes with old implementation risks of very stable technologies that have been functioning for 20 or 100 years. It comes with a manufacturing dusty environment or uncarpeted environment where IT doesn't traditionally play, so that will open up a whole bunch of new opportunities for IT and for system integrators and so forth to start working in the industrial world, the mining world, manufacturing and so forth. And I think the third last thing has to do with connectivity. Mm-hmm. I think our connectivity technologies, whether it's 5G or any of the other lighter technologies, the advent of IoT, the connected world or the sensed world, is going to seek connectivity. And the old traditional ways of connecting is either not reaching all the outposts where the mines are and industrial complexes are, and also a lot of it is too expensive. So I think we'll see an evolution in how we connect the world, and services will come out of that. So that's going to be an opportunity, and all of the opportunities that I mentioned, we are actively evolving and building competency.
In broad terms, this digitalization of everything, if I can call it that, what is the long-term impact of that going to be for industry?
That's a very interesting question. So transformation is first seen on a P&L. So everybody talks about it and everybody's doing it. Take out the P&L and look at the income streams in your business, and you'll see some of those income streams are busy deteriorating or dwindling, and you're starting to make money from some other areas. Or some costs, line items are changing, and so we're seeing a transformation of the profit and loss statement. That's the big thing that's happening. Over the long term, the business is going to change. We have to get out of the analog world and we have to get into a digital world purely because of the friction that happens in analog. So we stop putting stamps on envelopes and sending letters because there's too much friction in that business. So we send an email. And the friction is gone and the cost is gone. So it changes how we consume things, buy things, interact with partners, interact with the community around us. You can see just digitally is a dire effect, if you look from the perspective of old models, because it will start consuming old models and replace it with something new. Now, excuse me, there's a big question mark around labor. What will the effect be on labor?
Yeah.
We're a country with high unemployment, and if we pursue a digital strategy as a country, smart cities and so forth, what will that do for labor? But I think there is a balance in that shaped future where labor plays a major role still in terms of infrastructure, in terms of services, in terms of thinking, in terms of emotion. There's things that we do that we want an emotional touch, whether it is a customer touch that you want, that we don't want purely to be digital, and there will be still huge opportunities in that world. But it means that we have to reshape our workforce and reshape our youth, specifically entering the workforce, in preparing them to live in a digital alternative world. Also, the prediction that this is going to be a day and night event, so we will switch one off and we'll switch one on. Please notice how intelligent your car is becoming over the years. So autonomous vehicle is not a singular event. It's happening to you while we're sitting here. Mm. So it will start taking over certain functions. If you start skidding or taking a corner dangerously, it will adjust. It starts learning your driving behavior and adjusting your gearbox response. It's warning you to when you need services. It does a whole bunch of things. It can communicate. So it's becoming a wireless connected device, your car. Now, that didn't happen overnight. Every model you buy is just a little bit more clever. Mm. And that goes to your fridge and your TV and your PC, and everything around you is steadily becoming more intelligent. So these things are some doomsday events that people are talking about. There are no events. It's crawling up on us, and it's happening to us on a daily basis. Your PC, your phone will just say, I need to do an update, I need to do an upgrade, and you press a button and it does it. And it's just a little incremental change of intelligence that's coming into everything. So they say, what does the digital future hold? Well, we're adjusting it totally. We're already in it, and we're adjusting it to it daily, and so we will continue to do that.
We don't even realize it to a large extent. And of course, I mean, we've been through technological disruption as a species many times before, and there are always doomsayers who say, well, this is going to be this means the end of work, the end of employment. It doesn't happen. There are new jobs that are created. I mean, someone was saying to me the other day, imagine meeting someone 100 years ago and telling them about the jobs of today, computer programmers, for example. I mean, they wouldn't have a concept of what the world of work looks like today, yet here we are, gainfully employed, skills adapt. It's not necessarily going to be the jobs apocalypse.
Yes, I totally agree with you. And the jobs that are disappearing are jobs that should disappear. Mm-hmm. It's we doing robots' work, and we should stop doing that. And we should do things that are valuable to us as a human species, that's socially valuable to us, that maintains an equilibrium in our social life and in our family life. We should do things that are good for our health. We should do things that are good for our emotions and psychology. We shouldn't do things that are so harmful to us. And a lot of the things, if you look at how we work, the hours we work, the disruption that we experience daily with mobile devices and our work totally infringing on our private lives and the rest of it, the way we are going about it is wrong. It's not healthy to do it. And so technology is coming and it's going to start stopping us from doing those things, and we'll have more control over what we want to do and how we do it. So I think it's a positive thing that's happening to us, and we should embrace the positive side of it. Sure, there should be control and governance and procedural sound things around what we do. We shouldn't just allow everything to run havoc and evolve on its own, but we do have those controls, so we should exert them. You know? So I think a digital future is a better future. I see our kids are better equipped. They've got better access to information. They're more informed of how to make choices because they can see those choices. They are not secluded into some ideology that their parents had. They can see the world. They can participate in the world. I think this is it's all good news. It's all a better world. Due to digital technologies, in my view.
There's probably a whole podcast to be done specifically looking at the impact of digital transformation or the digitalization of industry on South Africa specifically, because we obviously have a unique set of challenges. But I know we're not here to talk about this very fascinating subject today.
But I think it's justified to have a chat about that.
Yeah, I think so. But we're here today to talk about the distribution game,
yes,
and how that is changing quite significantly as well. I know you guys are gearing up for the big Cisco Partner Conference, which is happening at Sun City next month. And I know this is going to be a key event for AXIS.
Yes.
Maybe just tell us a bit about the event, first of all, and your involvement in it and what you're hoping to achieve from it.
Right. It's an annual Cisco event, a partner conference, and where it invites all its partners, whether those are the consumers of the technology, the end users, whether it's the distributors, of which we are one of the two Cisco distributors in the territory, or whether it's the channel partners, from service providers, telecoms, down to system integrators and resellers. And it basically exposes the market to where Cisco sees themselves play in this digital transforming world and what is the value that they bring with their technologies to us as a community. And Cisco is a pivot data center technology. Really, it owns a huge market share globally, plus 60% of the data center, which is the compute and the networking. And it's evolving into a software business specifically around security and software-defined LAN and WAN technologies. So it's very interesting to us as a tone and as a direction of where they see the market go because they consume information from such a broad, from the globe, essentially, and then come and give direction to us. So that's where we learn, that's where we connect, and that's where we exchange ideas and how we see ourselves in South Africa go through or pursue this digital world. The other second thing that's usually important is the change into the SMME, change in the SMME market. As you may know, that government is shifting a lot of the procurement, government procurement in our industry, away from big system integrators into smaller SMME or SMB, small business. And that's a huge shift for government, and it's trying to rectify the non-participation syndrome that we have in small business. It's very difficult in South Africa for a small business to participate in the income streams that come from public sector or in the income streams that come from enterprise banks, big companies. They can't access the business in those areas, and it's traditionally been trapped inside the big system integrators and resellers. And for good reasons, maybe, but the fact is that has to change. If we have to have a economy where everybody participates, government is taking the lead in terms of breaking the walls down for small business to participate. And so part of this conference is to start exhibiting our capabilities as partners that enable, or distributors or resellers that enable small business to participate. So that will all be topics of conversation that happens at Sun City.
I mean, the distribution business in South Africa has already changed quite a lot over the last 10, 20 years. I mean, 20 years ago, it was about box dropping. And it's much more than that now. Maybe paint us a picture of what the distribution game looks like today and what you think it's going to look like in the future.
Yes. So firstly, I guess we must overlay it with digital transformation, and I'll touch on that, the evolution, or what that evolution means to our business. But essentially, we now look at a world where all the big vendors globally are changing their businesses, and they're changing their businesses from where they were super active in the whole chain, from exposing their technologies to the end user market, servicing the end user market, go and call on the end user market, create the opportunities and the solutions for those opportunities, and then help execute them. We see steadily them all shrinking back into their core businesses. Excuse me. And in the process, a lot of the activities that traditionally was done by OEMs in South Africa, and you can name them by the name, all of them, they're all in the same place at the moment. They are moving those activities to distribution. So they're asking distribution to do market making. They're asking distribution to have enablement technical resources here, so that if there's a technical issue or training or solutions that need to be built, can distribution please help build them? We are being asked to support services for OEMs. So if our reseller base or end users need services, specialist technical services, then we execute those services. So we're doing the whole ambit of services that used to be fragmented into the system, either by the OEM, the system integrator, or the telco, or the end users themselves would do. A lot of the end users are shrinking their IT shops, saying, I will insource technical services rather than build it, a technical capability inside my business.
Why are the OEMs doing less services? Why are they looking to farm it out?
I think all of them are trying to transition to become agile, firstly. Mm-hmm. That they were super heavyweight businesses. If you look at the IBMs and the Oracles and the Ciscos and the Microsofts, all of them were heavyweight businesses, very heavy, very fixed in what they were doing, very dominant in their plays, and then overnight they became threatened. So we follow the IBMs of the world on how they had to transition from a big hardware software player into an agile cloud intelligent business. Well, how do you do that? You have to shed the weight, right? Mm-hmm. And so all of them have gone through that phase, saying, listen, I can't be doing all of these things, and also all I cannot fulfill all my traditional functions and transform my business. I need somebody else to take care of that part of my business so I'm agile and can move into the what the market expects me to be. All of us are facing those things. We see big banks, we see big system integrators, we see huge staff losses that happened over the last year in all of them. And it's in the drive to be agile and being able to refocus and retool their business for a digital world. The customers are looking for digital values, digital inputs, digital architectures, digital consulting. Everybody's looking in that direction. And we're coming with a box through the back door saying, like, you should buy a new box. And they say, no, we consume the box from the cloud, but help us evolve our business. So I think that's part of the transformation that's happening. And we see dwindling incomes or dwindling margins from traditional businesses. Even technical services have commodified. So if you rely only on that to provide you with the income stream, you will see that there's a deterioration or losing altitude in that business. And the challenge we have now is that the new cloud and digital world, because it's a consumption, pay-as-you-drink model, it doesn't immediately replace those dwindling profits. So while this transition is going on, this is where I raise the issue of an ecosystem. If you have to do it by yourself, you will go through, as an organization, you will go or experience a trough in income. While the one old business is deteriorating or dwindling or diluting, and the new business hasn't yet started up. And they call it a fish, right? The one business is going down, the other one's going up, and there's a space in the middle where everybody's upset because we're not making money. And so that's where the ecosystem comes in, where we absorb economic shocks for each other, where we absorb costs for each other, where we enable each other in the ecosystem, where I will have engineers that my system integrators will like to use, they will have some expertise that I would like to use, we'll buy and sell from each other in that transition period until the new models sift out and we understand what is it that really is our new speciality or new competence.
So if the OEMs are looking to scale down to some extent and are shifting support services into the distribution entities, does that necessarily mean you guys have to bulk up? And what does it mean for your ability to be agile in this new era?
That hurts, right? So that hurts. So traditionally, our profitability model was built on the fact that the OEM does everything. Mm-hmm. We represent them and we move the boxes. So we are a logistical partner or a fulfillment partner of the manufacturer. Now they come and they fire the people, but they don't fire the work. So the work comes to us. But our margin or profit model finds it hard to accommodate all these costs and still maintain profitability. So the OEMs are shifting costs to us. So unless there is a rework of our profitability and income from a vendor, we are in a place where we won't be able to do that. We actually have to say, no, you as a vendor are not viable anymore because we are doing so much more over the years. Every year there's a little bit more shifting to us in terms of marketing, well, the whole chain, in terms of opportunity creation, the marketing, reaching new markets, going into Africa, having the skills here to help our resellers, carrying stock, all of these things we have to do. And they say, look, you still have to work at 4 or 5% margins. It's just not a sustainable model. So the conversation is definitely there that we are reshaping the way we get rewarded by vendors, that we are reshaping the way that we are rewarded by SIs, because they are also coming to us saying, we will buy pre-sales as a service from you. We're not going to have pre-sales engineers ourselves. We will consume that service from you and we'll pay for it. So that makes more sense. As we go forward, the model will make more sense and people will realize that there are certain things that you have to invest in and there are certain things that you can consume out of a community or out of an ecosystem.
To what extent do you see yourselves expanding in that services space? I mean, I suppose you need to be careful not to tread on your resellers' feet as well, because they're also providing a lot of these services. So is your role as a distributor really to handheld your resellers, or is there an opportunity for you to start to service end user IT buyers directly with some of these options?
It's a difficult model because it's an experimental model. We have to figure it out as we go along. Mm-hmm. We do not want to step on the toes or to take away income from our resellers. Their viability, profitability, growth is our growth.
Yes.
So if we start breaking that, breaking the trust firstly, but secondly, invading their value, then we are undermining ourselves essentially. But having said that, we have big system integrators that consume advanced technology service for us. And they're saying that in future, we will not be building these services anymore. We will consume them from you. As long as there is a good, solid, transparent understanding of who brings what to the table at a particular instance of an opportunity. You're going to do this, I'm going to do this, and we're fine. We are not predatory, so we are not in a quest for our resellers' customers. We're not trying to own those customers. Mm. We're not trying to deal with them directly. And so that makes us Switzerland. It makes us a good company to drag in a non-competitive way.
So should the OEMs maybe be working with the resellers as well, rather than just through the distributor? I mean, is there an opportunity for all three tiers of the chain to be working much more closely together in solving customer problems?
Well, there we're talking about the ecosystem immediately. Right? Yeah. So that's one answer to that. The other answer is the OEMs need to scale in a friendly way. Mm. And certainly distribution is the tool. So as we can provide those services to multiple system integrators and resellers, where if you scale one reseller, it's an isolated event, doesn't scale. Mm. So, of course, they have to keep that balance, and they do. But we've got a specific role to play in terms of scaling across the whole channel for this future that we're talking about.
So you mentioned government specifically looking to procure more IT services and products from SMEs. And if corporate South Africa starts to head in the same sort of direction, how is that going to reshape the IT industry in South Africa? What does it mean for those big systems integrators? What does it mean for the SME market? What does it mean for distributors in the longer term?
It means drastic change. That's one thing we know. Definition of that change, firstly, those system integrators like us as distributors need to build SME ecosystems. Mm. They will not be able to have a go-to-market without SMEs in a cluster around them that will provide services in concert with them. So that now is the new part of the new ecosystem, and that will go for OEMs that will participate in the SME evolution. We are, and the channel will be. So all of us in concert will provide those services. And once again, we might get SMEs that were qualified by a vendor to do something, and we'll take them for the next step to enable them in going to market activities and so forth. So the SMEs will be part of our whole OEM distribution reseller channel, will be part of that community. But big system integrators will not be able to go and as a go-to-market singular, this is my value proposition. My value proposition is this, and I also do this, these set of services that will be executed through SMME community. Absolutely.
So we know that cloud, software as a service, computer as a service, it's all changing the way end users buy IT. How does that affect the distribution chain, and what do you guys need to do? I know that you're looking at building a digital services engine. Maybe just talk us through what that entails exactly, and how you adjust for this world where someone can sit at their desk and, you know, fire up a compute resource somewhere in the cloud.
Yeah, it's called a platform business. Mm-hmm. So if we look at AWS or look at Apple, they create a platform, and you buy the Apple device, and you have iTunes, and you have 1,000 people's music on there. Hundreds of thousands of people's music on there. But essentially, it creates a platform for people to participate in, and you can then consume from that platform in whatever fashion you would like to. And you can blend certain values or different things across the platform, whether those services and product, etc. So Axis will soon be known as a platform company. And what that means is that we will be able to digitally represent our value set and external third-party value sets on our platform for consumption. So if you would like an AWS cloud services, you'll be able to see an icon on our platform and you'll be able to click it and you can consume AWS cloud service. If you need 100 laptops for your users to actually consume this AWS, you'll be able to click an icon and get 100 laptops to do that. If you're looking for application monitoring service, you'll be able to consume it from the cloud. If you're looking for an architectural consulting service, you'll be able to consume it from there in any way, form or fashion, and a combination of those. So we already integrated with things, Cisco, Microsoft, where we can fully represent all the values of Cisco, all the technologies of Cisco on our platform, and then you can combine it with a Microsoft, or you can combine it with a piece of hardware, or with a switch, or a router. You can do all of those things. So it is a platform, and on that platform, you'll be able to, as a custom reseller, be able to consume, or as a pass-through, you will be able to set yourself up a shopfront inside of our platform as a reseller and present those services and products to your end users.
So are you going to build your own platform, your own cloud platform, or will you work with your partners like Amazon, Microsoft, etc. to do that?
No. So our platform is built by ourselves. Mm-hmm. And there's essentially two reasons for it. I think we have super competent software development people in South Africa. And so it's not a lack of skill. We've got the skills to do that. And we see some of the overseas companies have development houses in South Africa. So the raw material to build a platform is here in our country. I think it's advantageous in terms of speed to reaction. So we'll be able to integrate quickly or change things quickly as the local market or the African market requires, without taking a ticket and standing in a queue in America for somebody to do changes to a piece of software that we've acquired from overseas. And thirdly, we've got the rand as opposed to dollar pricing. Mm-hmm. So we'll be able to keep the pricing stable, because that's the advantage of a platform, and the advantage of cloud is a cost advantage. And if you have the huge flux of the rand dollar or the rand euro in the mix, and the deterioration of the rand year on year makes your platform more expensive without adding more value. So it essentially annihilates the model. Mm. So we think being local is strategic to the platform, and be building that ourselves. Yeah.
So what's that platform going to look like in a few years? How do you see it growing?
I think it will look like Amazon, where Amazon and Azure, those will be services on our platform amongst the other vendors that we represent, whether it's IBM Cloud or whether it's Oracle Cloud. So that it will be a multi-vendor, multi-service platform where you'll be able to consume everything that you consume from us today in a digital pay-per-use format.
So almost like a technology agnostic in a way.
100%, just like we are today.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
So it will reflect what we do today, but as I said, there's a lot of the analog services that will evolve into digital models. As we all know, we're in a very dynamic world at the moment with lots of changes happening. And we need to, like I said in the beginning as well, we need to keep our ear close to our community and close to the market and close to the business to figure out how do we navigate going forward. And we're quite confident that we've at least got some of the strands in our hands as we move along.
Well, this has been a fascinating discussion, Jacques. Thanks so much for your time. Jacques Malherbe is Chief Technology Officer at Axis. Thanks for talking to Tech Central today.
Thank you for the opportunity, Duncan. Appreciate it.